Kof Beis Tevis, Rabbi Saul Sandman, the perspective of women through the eyes of the Rishonim.
Good morning, and thank you for having me here. I want to tell you a little bit how I got to this. In the British Library, there are some interesting medieval Hebrew manuscripts. I mean, some from the times of the Rishonim. And amongst them, there are some very famous Haggadahs. In the beginning of these Haggadahs, before you get to the actual text of the Haggadah, there are illustrations, cycles of illustrations. And I was wondering, and people may have heard of some of these Haggadahs, the Golden Haggadah, available online. You can see most of the illustrations online. Another one called the Sister Haggadah, because of its close relation to the Golden Haggadah. So in these Haggadahs, you wonder, why? What are these illustrations at the beginning? Are they just cute pictures that someone paid vast amount of money for and getting gold leaf put on and designed very intricately? Presumably, they're more than just cute pictures. Presumably, they're trying to say something. I was trying to figure out what these illustrations are trying to say. People have thought about this already. I'm not the first one to think about this and what the connection is to the text of the Haggadah. And I'll get a little bit more into that later on. So through that, I got into this other issue. Is there a relationship between these illustrations and various perspectives that were floating around in Machshava at that time? And one of the issues that stands out there in these two Haggadahs, there's also a third one called, the people maybe have heard of, the Sarajevo Haggadah, which had a very colorful history and been saved several times in Bosnia and things like so. These three Haggadahs survived to our day. They're available. They exist still. And presumably there are many more like it back in the hundreds of years ago in Spain in the 1300s. So the question that I had was, so what is the connection? What are these illustrations trying to say, if anything? And one of the things that came out is that women are featured in a very interesting way in these illustrations. The last illustration in the two British Library Haggadahs of the story, it starts off with the creation of the world, and it goes all the way through Shiras Hayam, which we'll be reading in 2 weeks. Actually, it's the Revi of 2 weeks from now. And the last illustration of both of these is the Shira of the women, featured very prominently. Interestingly enough, in the Golden Haggadah, there is a difference in the way that panel is illustrated than all the other panels. All the other panels, the people take up much less of the panel, and there's a lot of background buildings and context. And in this last illustration from the Tanakh, there's much more of a close-up, and the people take up, the women with their different interesting instruments and things, they take up basically almost the entire panel, much more close view. And from that, we move into a few illustrations of contemporary Jewish people from those times getting ready for Pesach, and then we go into the Haggadah itself. So there's a certain stress there, it seemed to me, and other people who came before me, that there is a stress on what the women are doing. So to take a step back, I'm going to look at three perspectives. One perspective is a perspective that we see starting with Rashi and being developed by, I don't know who, there's an edition of writings of the Baalei Tosfos on Chumash, and there's no name, I haven't seen the manuscript, but it's been published, the Baalei Tosfos on Chumash. And there's one perspective that emerges there of picking up on the idea of the Nashim Tzidkaniyas, how the holiness, the righteousness of these women, how they're particularly attuned to Hashem more so than the men. Perspective number one. Perspective number two I want to look at is amongst the rationalist Sfardim, the people, for example, like the Rambam, the Radak, and other such people, who have a completely, they have a more philosophically influenced the idea of women being lower than men in some ways. And how men represent the pure intellect, women represent maybe a lower degree of intellect and things like that. And then the third perspective I want to look at is that of the Kabbalah. And we see this coming up in L'chadoidi, for example, where they agree to some degree with the hierarchy given by these Sephardi rationalists. Actually, when I say Sephardi, I mean either people who are in Spain, people who are, as you know, southern Spain was under Islamic domination at this time, people who are either in Spain or under Islamic domination in the Near East, or even people who are in southern France, in Provence, that was all under the influence of the same culture. And the third degree is, the third perspective is Mukubalim, who to some degree agree that there is a hierarchy, but they find certain ultimate and great features in the female, in the women, in the lowest level of that hierarchy that makes them higher in some ways than the men. Interestingly enough,
the Mukubalim were at a different time.
Well, the Mukubalim were a long chain, but it goes from the Middle Ages, before the Middle Ages, through the Middle Ages, to after the Middle Ages. L'chadoidi is soon after the Middle Ages.
You're talking about
pre-Ari, though. Or even at the time of the Ari. After the Ari, it continues to develop in Hasidus also. This is one long trend where they had the idea that, yes, in one way in the hierarchy, the women are beneath the men, are lower, next stage down, represented by the sphere of Bina, as compared to Chachma or Malchus, as compared to the higher six spheres, the emotional spheres. But there's the idea of Soif Maisev Machshava Techila, the quote the Pasuk Eishes Chayel Ateres Vayla, and these sorts of things, that there's something in the, that there's an Amunah that comes out, a connection to Hashem that comes out, Tavka in that lowest place that's greater than the men in some ways. So now the first thing that I want to look at is what was going on in northern France, Rashi, Balei Tosfos, and a little bit in Ashkenaz also. So this, in northern France, is called Sarfas, and then Germany is called Ashkenaz. I don't know if since this Baal Tosfos, who will come up shortly, is not named, I don't know where to locate, but there is a lot shared. There are some differences between Ashkenaz and Sarfas, but there's a lot of overlap. So first we have the Pasuk. This is the end of the Shira in Shemois Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Kaf. Evatikach Miriam Hanavia, Achois Aharoina Satoif Biada, Vateitzena Kol Hanashi Machareha, which means that Miriam, the prophetess, sister of Aharon, took the toif, whatever that means, we'll see soon in her hand. Vateitzena Kol Hanashi Machareha, all the women went out after her, the supim uva mecholos, with tupim and mecholos, whatever, usually probably drums and dances, but we'll see that it's not so clear. Miriam and Miriam, they did a responsive reading with them, or whatever you want to call it. Shira LaHashem ki ga'oi ga'osus rechei ramayam. Sing to Hashem because He's exalted, etc. Now, we have Rashi. Rashi discusses what the word toif means. He said it means a musical instrument. Then he has another, the next Dibur HaMaskil, very interesting, is Misupim uvim mecholos. They went out with tupim and mecholos. Now, what are these two things? Rashi does not explain mecholos here. All he explains is tupim, but for some reason he quotes the word of mecholos, for his comment, and he says just about. He says muftaches hayu tzadkaniyos shebador, the righteous women of that generation trusted. Shehakadosh Baruch Hu. That Hashem is going to do miracles for them. And they took tupim, or this musical instrument that he defined in the previous Dibur HaMaskil, they took them out of Egypt. So now, the obvious issue that he's coming to explain is why all of a sudden for the women do we have this whole issue of the men didn't mention anything, that they had any instruments, any musical instruments. There's actually different perspectives on this. There's another shita that says they used drums to drown out their voices because of the issue of kolishim, that they didn't want the men to hear them singing. But it seems that Rashi is trying to distance himself from that perspective. And he's saying it wasn't anything to do with kolisha. It has to do because they were muftaches. They had a certain bitachon. They had a certain trust in Hashem, more so than the men did. And therefore they took out these instruments with them from Egypt, nothing to do with Kolisha. And I think that's why he also quotes the word Uve Mecholos. Because Mecholos presumably, although we'll see it's not so clear, Mecholos presumably means dance. Now the dance is not something that you take out with you to drown out Kolisha. The dance, so I think that's why he brings, even though he doesn't explain the word of Mecholos, he's trying to show you that what they're doing here is nothing to do with Kolisha. It has to do with a certain bitachon, a certain excitement that they have, a certain relationship they have with Hashem. There's a certain inspiration that they have, and therefore they're dancing. They have their musical instruments because of their bitachon. Now it's interesting. If you look in most editions of Rashi that bring sources that Rashi draws his material from, usually Rashi doesn't say where he's getting it from, and here he doesn't say. But people later on said, "Oh, he got this from Mechilta on the Pasuk." If you look at the Mechilta, which is much older, it's from the time of the Tanaim. If you look at the Mechilta on this Pasuk, you'll see there's a major difference between Rashi and the Mechilta. Although there is something that comes from the Mechilta. In the Mechilta, it says that's a toif. It's at the end of the Mesichta, the Shirasa, the section on the Shira, the end of the section on the Shira, that you have this Esa toif biyada. Where did the Israelites have tupim and mecholos in the midbar? We see two things right here. Number one, we see mecholos are taken to be not dances but some sort of instrument. And the question is, who have these things in the midbar? Not the nashim. It's not speaking in Mechilta. It doesn't mention a word about the women. It mentions Yisrael. It says, Elo ha-tzadikim, in the masculine gender, the male, the tzadikim, hayu muftachim, again in the masculine gender, v'yoideim, with the yud mem in the end, again in the masculine gender, shakadosh baruch hu oseh lahem nisim u'gvuros. And they knew that Hashem was going to do nisim and gvuros for them. So then you have different versions of the next words. Eis sheyitzin, the time that they went out, their imitzias, and with their going out, mimitzrayim. Viskinu lahem, again in the masculine gender, tupim u'mecholos. They prepared tupim drums or whatever this instrument is, and mecholos presumably taken to be another instrument. So the big difference is that this has nothing to do with the women. And the big problem with this, according to Pshuta Shel Mikra, which is Rashi is trying to do, is doesn't mention a word about tupim or mecholos in the shiras ha-anashim, when the men are singing. Doesn't mention a word about drums, dances. It comes in only in pasuk kaf when it speaks about the song of the women. So why does Mechilta completely not pay attention to that? I don't know, but Rashi certainly was doing pshuta shel mikra. Is self-evident why he makes this a comment about the women in particular. I don't know of any earlier source for that. Rashi doesn't need to justify himself in it because it's very straightforward. Okay. There's a little bit more to the Mechilta, but we don't need it for the present purpose. Now, there's this Tosfos HaShalem, which was published several decades ago, based on manuscripts, where this whole idea is expanded very greatly. Now, I'll read a few. This on the beginning, Vatikach Miriam Hanaviyah, and Miriam the Naviyah took. So if you look in the Chumash, there's a break. It's a new parsha. There's a new section that was a space between the old section and this section. So parsha zoi pesucha, and the break is a break where it starts and is a completely new unit. It doesn't finish off the end of the line before. It starts a whole new unit in the layout of the Chumash. Shaloi. Not to mix the song of Miriam with the first song. Why not? Why shouldn't the two songs be mixed together? The men's song and the women's song. Well, he gives two reasons. But the first reason he gives is Shaloi la seisa tefela v'arai, not to make it subordinate and by the way. Ela kedai hi la'atzma liyeh shira chashuva. It's worthwhile in its own right to be a prominent song. He gives another reason, again, so the men and the women should not be mixed together for tznius. So those are the two reasons he gives. So we see two different traditions coming together in this comment by whichever one of the Baalei Tosfos it is. He goes on to develop the idea, the great length and the great nuance, many, many facets to this. He says, Vatikach Miriam Hanaviyah, those three words. The end of the word Vatikach is a ches, the end of the word Miriam is a mem, and the end of the word Hanavia is a hey. So he says, Soif Tevas Chama. The ches, mem, hey, spells out the word Chama, which means sun, And he quotes from Shir HaShirim that he's connecting now the Shira that happened at the Yam Suf to the whole song of Shir HaShirim. And he says that this is referring to the verse Barak HaChama, Shehaya Sayafa. Miriam had this beauty. Paneha Latsaharayim. He said her face shone like the midday, like the noon, like the noontide. So there's a whole build-up of the Madrega of Miriam. And now then it goes from there to speaking about how she was in the via. Now Rashi says, where in the words of Atikach Miriam Hanavia, Rashi brings the following. Because it says, when it's after Atikach Miriam Hanavia, it says Achay Saharan, the sister of Aaron. And there's a whole Gemara about this. So where was Miriam and Aviah when she was a sister of Aaron? Before Moshe was born, she told her parents, how can you separate from each other because of the gezerah that Paro made, that he's going to kill the boys? You're worse than Paro. Paro is decreeing only against the boys, but you're decreeing also against the girls. And she told her parents, get back together, you'll have a holy child, etc. So that's when she was in Aviah. But the Tosfos goes even further. He says, "An Aviah, Amra Hashira Hazoy bin Aviyos of Ruach HaKodesh." It wasn't only that she was in Aviah back when she was a little girl and she told her parents that they should get back together. She was actually in Aviah now while she was singing the Shira. The Shira was said under inspiration of Nevuah for her. Baruach HaKodesh. L'chach Nemar HaNaviah. That's why it says HaNaviah. It doesn't say he's arguing with Rashi, but he just gives a completely different reason, not according to the Gemara. Oh, the new insight here. Okay. There's a lot more here. We won't go into all of it, but there are a few more points worth pointing out. One opinion he brings is that it says Hatoif, the drum. It doesn't say a drum or they took drums. She says she took the drum. So he points out the hey hayadiyah, the definite article, the drum, is referring to the, he says that there's a sefer called Heichalos, which is about the different, it's a mystical sefer, a Jewish mystical sefer going back a long time, speaks about the different chambers where the malachim minister to Hashem and they guard the doors. And there he said there's a description of the malachim yasharis have tupim. Even the angels have it. So it says, Ha Toif, she took. She said that was actually a Toif, it's possible to say, that came to her from Shemayim, which is elevating and exalting this whole Shira of the Nashim. And he says, even the word Ha Toif, Hey is 5, Tuf is 400, and Pei is 80, so we have 485, is the same gematria as Min HaShemayim. It works. I checked it out. So again, he's making this whole Shira Sanashim into something very exalted, very elevated, very heavenly. Okay. Then he connects this based on the Masorah. People may see in some Chumashim there are little notes. Not too many of the Chumashim printed these days have these, but if you go back to the time of the Rishonim, you look at manuscripts, it was standard in every Chumash. There is every Tanakh, there's something called a Masorah. There are two Masorahs, a big one and a small one. And it tells you how many other places in the Tanakh you have similar phrases, etc. So he says that in the Masorah, it says that there are two places where there are similar phrases used about the woman singing, and the other is with the daughter of Yiftach. And he brings a whole parallel how both of them were actually said as it's in the state of Nevuah, and they both were holy women, etc. And in the end, he actually connects the song of the women to with the dance, where it says the machol, not only the tupim and the machol, the dance as well. He connects it to Shir HaShirim again, where it says Ma techezu bashulamis kimacholis hamachanoyim. What do you see in the shulamis? Like you see like the dance of the camps. And he says, what are these camps? He gives two opinions. One opinion, the men were dancing separately for the women separately from the men. But it doesn't really mention anything about the men dancing in Az Yashir, in the Shir So he said, the other machana that is speaking about is a malachim. So he says that the women's dance was on the level of the dance of the malachim, of the machal of the malachim. So the Inch as the whole thing is built up to make the whole Miriam a very holy figure, very heavenly figure, that's a tzaddikus of great proportion, to make the dance of the women. And very, so the whole idea of Rashi is developed that the women are operating in a level of great connection to Hashem, a great bitachon to Hashem, great awareness of Hashem. Miriam is on a very exalted level. It wasn't only that she was a nevuah back in the day when she was a little girl, that she now the whole thing is happening in a state of nevuah, etc. Maybe one more point relevant here. We'll see if we have time. We'll come back to it. I think we'll move on now. Move on to the Sephardi rationalist tradition. Before I do, it's probably okay. We'll see if we come back to anything. Let's say a word about my reading of these Haggadahs. These Haggadahs were produced in Spain after the reconquest of Spain. From most of Spain had been taken back from Muslims by Christians. This was later in the Middle Ages already, after the Zohar had come to light, etc. There was far, far along in the development of Svarim. So they had access to all these different Svarim. They knew Rashi, they knew Tosfos, they knew Zohar, they knew the rationalist Rishonim, they knew Rambam, they knew Radak. They had all this information. My personal take on these Haggadahs is that they're not identical. You can look at them and you can say, okay, they're basically the same plan of illustrations, very similar to each other. But once you start looking at the details, you see that they're completely, not completely, but they have important differences. Now, to take two steps back, these illustrations, as have been shown by other people, were actually modeled on Christian illustrations. So some people say, okay, they're just influenced by the Christians. But if you look a little bit more carefully, you'll see how in almost every case, there's a polemic against the Christian perspective. They're trying to turn they're trying to turn things upside down. They're trying to argue against the Christian perspective. By using those same models, but making changes in them, they're trying to have a counter-argument about Judaism. And remember, this was in Golos. The Jews had been in Golos for over 1,000 years at that time, well over 1,000 and a couple hundred years. And there was heavy pressure on them to convert, and there was a very strong program of pressure in Spain to get Jews to convert already at this time. And the illustrations seem to be a Jewish self-defense to show they're making their claims against us, but we know that we are Hashem's chosen people. And therefore, the illustrations start off with the creation of the world, and they go all the way to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and from Yetzias Mitzrayim, they go straight into contemporary Jews living Pesach. So I think it's showing that what started at the creation of the world and culminated in Yetzias Mitzrayim is what we are doing today. We don't have to worry about what anyone else says. We don't have to worry about any other claims. You get into the complexities, there's actually a response to what the Christians were doing. Interestingly enough, if you look at some of the first illustrations, it's an illustration of Chava emerging from the side of Adam. Now we know that most Christian translations of, or I think all maybe Christian translations of the Bereishis, the word Selah in Hebrew, which can mean either side or a rib, is translated to be rib. But for some reason, this Christian illustration used the Jewish idea that it was not from a rib of Adam, but it was from a side of Adam. Which is interesting. So the Christians are getting this perspective against their own tradition from the Jewish perspective. And then the Jewish people were then retaking this Jewish idea that had been canonized, so to speak, in this Christian illustration. They were reclaiming it as a Jewish way. Again, Chava emerging from the side of Adam. But if you look at the differences in the illustrations, and some of these illustrations of Adam and Chava are turned away. Adam is turned away. Adam is attentive to Chava. Sort of seems to be rejecting Chava. If you get into the nuances of the various illustrations, and I think that there's actually a difference in the attitudes in the different Haggadahs. Some there's more of a closeness and an appreciation of the relationship between Adam and Chava, and in some of them there's more of a distance between Adam and Chava. And I just want to give you a little perspective now on the maybe a stereotypical perspective from the Sephardi world. So Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra has a commentary, multiple commentaries on the Torah, and in some places you'll see printed as a Shita Acheres on Bereishis Pasuk Gimel, Perek Gimel Pasuk Kaf Aleph. He says, "Vine ata galal lechaberemes soida gan v'hanahores v'hakasonas." He's going to give you the remes, the soid, the mystical or mysterious or deeper meaning, an esoteric meaning of Gan Eden. And he said, "Loi matzasi le'echad agadolim zeh hasoid rak le'Rav Shlomo ben Gabi Rolzal b'avur shehaya chacham gadol b'soid nefesh." The only place where he found this, not in any of the other great people, but in the works of Shlomo ibn Gabi Rol, who was a big expert, the wise man on the workings of the soul. He says what Eden refers to allegorically, Eden hu ha'elyon, Eden refers to the higher level, v'agan ha'molei ha'hamoin, the garden is full of the masses, so you have a difference between the masses and the elite here. So the Eden is a higher level, but the garden is a lower level, full of all the different things, of all the different, like it's full of all the different flora. The river that's going from Eden to Gan is like the mother of all the physical, of all the bodies, of all the physical things, giving life to them. The different branches of the river are like the different angels, different main angels. Adam hachachma, and what does Adam refer to? That refers into the in the person, in the nefesh of the person. That refers to the chachma, to the wisdom within the person. So again, we have the higher parts, and we have the masses, which in the individual soul probably refers to the other parts of the person, and we have the life that goes from the higher part to the lower part, etc. Then Adam HaChachma, and where do we see this? Shekoyre Shemais, because he has the wisdom to give names to the animals and all the other things. V'chava, k'mashma'o, haruach hachaya. And Chava, just like your name sounds, is the animate spirit. So we have pure wisdom being the male, and we have the woman being the spirit of animation, of the physical life, basically. V'hanachash hamis'ave, and the snake represents appetites, bodily appetites. And he goes on from there. So we have the hierarchy right there. This is very typical. Radak has a very similar system that he uses, etc. Now, so we see here that women, and the Radak develops the whole theme. He speaks about why Adam was asleep when Chava was separate, was developed from him, or taken there, or actualized from him. And he says because there's a tension between them. He is pure intellect, and he's not interested in the physical side. She's more engaged with practical matters and physical matters, and he wants to turn away from that. He's not interested. Only when he's turned off does she come out, and when there's a conflict between them, etc. That means when he's asleep, when the pure intellect is not active, that's when the practical intellect to do with physical matters comes forth, then it's not good for him to be too much with her, etc. There's a whole idea developed there, which is a Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, the end of Perek Aleph, says, Isha, Shalomda Torah, Yesh Lo Schar. Rambam's coming from the same world. A woman who learns Torah has reward, or payment. It's not the same as the reward that the man will get, because she is not commanded to learn Torah. Whoever does things is not commanded to do it gets less reward. Even though she does get reward, the Chachamim commanded not to teach one's daughter Torah. He gives a reason here. Rambam gives an explanation. The majority of women, their minds are not focused in order to learn. And they transform, they take out the words of Torah into meaningless ideas. In Hilchos Tshuva, the end of the Sefer Amada, this 10th Perek, the Rambam has develops this theme. He speaks about why we should serve Hashem, not so we should receive rewards. He said, not to have a long life, etc. We should serve Hashem out of love, because this is true, because we love Hashem, we love the truth. He said, "Ein ro'oi lavid es Hashem al derech zeh." It's not worthy to serve Hashem for reward. Sha'ovid al derech zeh hu ovid meyira. The person who does it out of fear. This is not the level of neviim or chachamim, of prophets or sages. Who serves Hashem in this way? Amayaretz, the common masses. Remember, we saw also in what Ibn Ezra brought down, he had this word, ahamoin, the masses. There is certain elitism going on here. The masses do it in this way. Vanashim and women, vaketanim and children do it for these reasons. They serve Hashem for reward out of fear, or they want to get reward. We indoctrinate them, we teach them to serve Hashem out of Yira. Until their minds increase, their knowledge increases, which seems that there is a hope that in potential these people are able to develop. And that's the interesting question. Does Rambam actually believe that women are capable of more? And we see in the Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, Perek Nun Aleph, he has a whole discussion of Misas Neshikin, death by a kiss from Hashem, which means that a person through his lifetime developed his intellect, his capacity of understanding abstract concepts, the ultimate abstract concept being Hashem himself, who's not physical but completely spiritual and intellectual. And through a lifetime of that, a person at the end of life, when he overcomes all of his bodily desires, is able to have his mind fuse with Hashem, and at that's a moment of death, of an ecstatic death, of a lofty death. And he said, not too many people have had this experience, but three who have had it are Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, which means that Rambam does hold out the hope that in potential women also can attain these things, although in practical terms most women are probably not focused along these lines. It's not an essential barrier. It's only, in fact, most women are not on that level, but it's possible for women to come to that. And how are we doing with time? There's about time to wrap it up. So just finish with the Kabbalah, where both of these things are brought together. As I said earlier, the Kabbalah indeed holds on to this hierarchy that men are maybe on a higher level intellectually, women on a lower level. But they also hold on to this idea that we found in the northern French Rishonim, that there's a certain amuna, or a certain closeness to Hashem, that exists in women. And there we have the idea, we say in L'chod Doidi, we say in the third stanza of L'chod Doidi, we say, Soif Ma'isav Machshava Techila. The last stage was what Hashem had in mind initially, Hihi Mekor HaBracha, the source of all blessing is from this final state. If this final state can the Kedusha, the Elokus, can flow down through this final state, that's where the ultimate greatness emerges. And we say, Eishes Chayla Teres Baila, we say, Boy V'Sholom Teres Baila, that the crown of her husband should come in peace, that she's higher than her husband in a way. So if, to summarize, if we're able to take this greatness and bring it through all the stages, bringing it, I mean, to have it communicate, have it flow down through the stages, what we arrive at is even greater than where the men stand on their own. And so that's indeed the three stages, the northern French, the greatness of the Amunah of the women, the Sephardi rationalists, there's a hierarchy, the women are lower, the Mikabalim, there is a hierarchy, but the hierarchy is turned on its head, and if you can bring that greatness down to the lowest stages, you actually come with something much greater, much deeper than you would have had just in the male side. So thank you.
Good.